Iran launches more missile and drone strikes on the positions of Iraq-based terror groups operating against Tehran. British police release images of 13 suspects in connection with recent violent protests outside of the Iranian embassy in London. And Hamas says Israel will pay the price for its crimes after four Palestinians were killed in a new Israeli attack on the Jenin refugee camp.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has once again pounded bases of anti-Iran terrorist groups located in Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. The IRGC says it used precision strike missiles and combat drones in its operation on Wednesday morning, adding that it has inflicted heavy losses on those terror groups. The IRGC has been conducting raids on positions of the terrorist hideouts in the Kurdistan region since September the 24th. Says it had urged Iraqi Kurdish officials to wipe out the presence of those terrorist outfits. But according to the IRGC, the Kurdistan regional government brushed aside its warnings and failed to adopt an appropriate measure. The IRGC says terrorists in northern Iraq have recently infiltrated Iran's border and attacked a number of outposts. The terrorists in northern Iraq are reported to have capitalized on protests over the death of an Iranian woman in police custody and largely involved in inciting riots across Iran. London police have released images of 13 suspects involved in violence during a recent protest outside of the Iranian embassy over the death of Mahsa Amini. The Met Police called the violence unacceptable and vowed to trace the culprits with obvious intent to cause injury. Five police officers were seriously injured in clashes with protesters. 12 people were arrested during the disorder. Meanwhile, London's Mayor Sadiq Khan denounced acts of violence by the protesters outside of the Iranian embassy on Sunday. Khan said that attacks on the police and communities will never be tolerated. The mayor said a, quote, selfish minority who attempted to hijack the protest must be brought to justice. We were earlier joined by our correspondent in London, Syed Purreza. He gave us an update on the Met Police investigation into the unrest outside of Iran's embassy in London.
So what the police is, are doing now is we've heard one of the commanders say that they will not allow such violent actions to take place in London at a time when the police are trying to make to ensure that peaceful demonstrations take place, if any, and that they are asking members of the public by releasing the images of 13 of those mobsters to come forward and say whether or not they can identify or recognize any of them so they can go after them. And as the police commander said, bring them to justice.
Iran's foreign minister says Washington has taken some steps towards giving guarantees to Tehran as part of efforts to revive the 2015 deal. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the revelation during an interview with an American media outlet, National Public Radio. The top Iranian diplomat underlined that the issue of guarantees is of great importance for Tehran that can pave the way for a sustainable agreement. The U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the deal in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. Since last year, Iran and the remaining signatories have held several rounds of talks to revive the deal. Iran is seeking U.S. guarantees that it will never again pull out of the deal. Tehran is also calling for the resolution of the safeguards issues with the U.N. nuclear agency in a bid to revive the agreement. Reports coming out of Iraq say several rockets have landed in the fortified Green Zone in the capital, Baghdad. At least four security personnel were injured after a number of Katyusha rockets hit the area. One of the rockets landed in front of Parliament, which was in a session to decide on the Speaker's resignation request. Lawmakers voted overwhelmingly against Mohammad al-Halbousi's resignation. There were also fresh protests near Parliament, with demonstrators demanding the dissolution of legislators to pave the way for early elections. Iraq has been in a political deadlock since October. That's when an alliance led by Cleric Muqtada al-Sadr won the most seats, but he failed to form a government amid differences with other political groups. The death toll from a fresh Israeli raid on the Palestinian refugee camp in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin rises to four. The victims include the brother of a Palestinian man who was killed by the regime forces back in April over an alleged shooting in Tel Aviv. Israeli troops surrounded his home and fired a missile at the building. The attacks sparked clashes between Israeli forces and Palestinian resistance fighters. The Palestinian Health Ministry says dozens of Palestinians sustained injuries. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned that Israel would pay the price of its crimes. The Hamas spokesman says the killings won't deter Palestinians from their path of resistance until Palestine is liberated fully. The regime has stepped up its deadly crackdown across the occupied territories. Earlier, our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil joined us to put a picture about the latest deadly Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank.
Israeli military said that Israeli soldiers and the special forces raided Jenin refugee camp and encircled the family home of Palestinian martyr Raad Hazem, who was killed in April after carrying out an anti-Israeli operation back in April. Of course, his father and other family members were on the run. The Israeli soldiers wanted to arrest his father, his brother, and other family members, but they didn't succeed to arrest them. However, Israeli soldiers fired anti-tank missiles and clashed with the Palestinians inside the house of Palestinian martyr Raad Hazem. This led to the killing of his brother. Palestinian was inside during the operation to Jenin and during the raid to Jenin. Confrontations took place between the Israeli soldiers and Palestinian resistance fighters. A third Palestinian has been wounded, and now the fourth Palestinian succumbed to his injuries he sustained during the clashes that took place in Jenin. We are speaking about over 44 Palestinians had been wounded, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry.
Polish member of European Parliament suggests the United States was behind the recent attacks on Russian-owned Nord Stream pipelines built to transfer gas to Europe via the Baltic Sea. On his Twitter account, Radoslaw Sikorski has shared a photograph of a gas leak with a caption saying, "Thank you, USA." The former Polish foreign minister implies that Washington had deliberately inflicted damages to the pipelines. In a separate post, Sikorski says Nord Stream is, quote, only logic for the Russian president to be able to blackmail or wage a war on Eastern Europe. On Tuesday, Swedish authorities issued a warning of two leaks on the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, shortly after Denmark reported a leak on the defunct Nord Stream 2. Russia and several European countries called them acts of sabotage. Gas pipelines are at the center of an energy standoff between the West and Russia. As the debate heats up over the leaks from the Russian-owned Nord Stream pipelines, Moscow has urged Washington to respond if it was behind the attacks. The Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman posted a February video in which the U.S. president had threatened to, quote, bring an end to Nord Stream 2 if Russian tanks cross Ukraine's border. Maria Zakharova said that Joe Biden must be responsible for his words and that Europe must know the truth. She also said that Moscow would call on the UN Security Council for a meeting in connection with provocations regarding the pipelines. Russia has dismissed allegations that it was behind the attacks, describing the accusations as, quote, stupid and absurd. The UN says it is fully committed to Ukraine's integrity after people in four Ukrainian regions voted in favor of joining Russia in five-day referendums.
Let me reiterate here that the United Nations remains fully committed to the sovereignty, unity, independence, and territorial integrity of Ukraine within its internationally recognized borders in accordance with relevant UN resolutions.
Western countries have also condemned the votes as, quote, illegal and a sham, saying that they will not accept the outcome. The U.S. says that it will introduce a new resolution at the UN Security Council to call on member states not to recognize any altered status of Ukraine. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N. said that her country will also bring a vote to the U.N. General Assembly if Russia decides to veto it in the Security Council. Kiev has also reacted to the referendums, saying that it will defend people in areas that have voted to join Russia. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has also called for more anti-Russia sanctions.
New and tough global sanctions against Russia are needed. Any annexations in the modern world are a crime against all states which consider the inviolability of borders to be vital for themselves.
Votes took place in the self-proclaimed republics of Luhansk and Donetsk in the east, as well as the Russian-controlled parts of Kherson and Zaporizhia. According to local authorities, vote tallies showed people saying yes to join Russia ranged from 87 to over 99%. The Kremlin previously vowed to protect the territories at all costs if they chose to become part of Russia. President Vladimir Putin is expected to formally declare the accession of the four regions to Russia on Friday.
From September 23rd to 27th, referendums on joining Russia were held in the Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics, as well as the Zaporozhye and Kherson regions. Pro-Russian representatives of those regions say joining Russia will secure their territories and restore historical justice. They believe the move is vital in the face of what they call constant acts of terror by the nationalist authorities in Kyiv and NATO countries that supply weapons to Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has backed the referendums, saying Moscow will support the decision made by the residents of the four regions.
Today, in the context of a special military operation and referendums in Donbas, saving people in all territories, namely saving people in all territories where this referendum is being held, is the main focus of Russia.
The referendum will determine the fate of 8 million people living in the LPR, the DPR, and the regions of Zaporozhye and Kherson.
People are tired and exhausted. They are being shelled and bombed every day. As a result, the residents of these republics ask authorities to hold referendums as soon as possible. Most of them have been supporting joining Russia since 2014. The second reason is the fear of any potential revenge by the Ukrainian regime.
Decisions of this kind and steps are always taken when the situation allows it. All the pros and cons are weighed. It has now become clear that the referendums are in line with the plans that the top leadership of Russia has. The future of Russia's constituent regions is complicated. Western countries will impose sanctions against their residents, like in the case of Crimea. Those regions were degraded under the Ukrainian leadership. Money was not invested in them at all. And now Russia is trying to ensure security and normal life in those territories.
Despite shelling of the territories where the secession referendums were held, the voter turnout was over 80% in all those regions. First partial results show that the overwhelming majority of the residents are in favor of joining Russia.
Most of the voters believe that if a state can join NATO despite Russia's opposition, then disputed Ukrainian regions can join Russia without the West's approval. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
The European energy crisis keeps worsening. Slovakia's Prime Minister Eduard Heger says soaring power costs amid the ongoing Ukraine war has left his country's economy at the risk of collapse. Heger warned that he would be forced to nationalize power supplies unless Bratislava received billions of euros in aid from the European Union. He also reiterated Slovakia's support for Ukraine, despite the economic pain. Slovakia's economic growth has slowed, while inflation has hit double digits. Russia supplied about 40% of European gas consumption before the Ukraine war. Russian gas flows are still running, but at severely reduced rates, pushing prices to record levels. Moscow says Western sanctions have hindered gas exports. European politicians say that is just a pretext and that Russia is using energy as a weapon. With less than a week ahead of a presidential election in Brazil, a new poll shows frontrunner Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has further widened his lead over the incumbent Jair Bolsonaro. The survey puts support for Lula at 46% in the first round of voting, against 33% for Bolsonaro. The leftist leader has also boosted his lead to a 14-point advantage in a potential runoff. However, recent polls indicate Lula could beat his far-right populist rival in the first round on October the 2nd. Lula rose from destitute poverty to become the most popular president in Brazilian history. He ruled the country between 2003 and 10, but fell from grace when he was jailed on alleged corruption charges. But now he is on the cusp of a remarkable comeback, as Bolsonaro has lost much of his popularity due to his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic and the economy. Tensions are ratcheting up between Turkey and Greece once again over two Aegean islands off the Turkish coast. Ankara is accusing Athens of ignoring the non-military status of the two islands of Lesbos and Samos. But a quick history check shows that Greece and Turkey, which are both part of the U.S.-led NATO alliance, have a long-standing feud over maritime borders and energy exploration rights in the Aegean and East Mediterranean seas.
Tensions between Greece and Turkey in the Aegean Sea are at boiling point, with Ankara summoning the Greek ambassador over alleged provocations in the region, where the two sides have been at odds over the status of the Greek islands. Turkey has accused Greece of deploying U.S.-made armored vehicles on the two islands of Lesbos and Samos, Ankara says this is in violation of international law and is calling on Athens to respect the formerly agreed non-military status of the area. Lesbos and Samos used to be part of the Ottoman Empire, but Istanbul's grip on them dwindled by the start of the 20th century. Greece incorporated the islands along with several others in the early 1910s. Athens sealed its sovereignty over them under the 1923 Treaty of Lausanne, which ended Turkey's hostilities with European nations. This agreement's terms specifically banned Greece from building naval bases or fortifications on four of them, including Lesbos and Samos. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan warned that Turkey wouldn't hold back on defending its rights, accusing Athens of playing perilous games. The Turkish government has also sent a protest note to the US saying American weapons should not be used in breach of the island's agreed status. That's after Ankara shared recorded aerial images showing ships loaded with US-made military equipment docking at the islands. In response, Greece has rejected Turkish accusations as unfounded. The two nations are at odds over a slew of issues, including commercial rights in the Aegean and territorial waters in the eastern Mediterranean Sea. Turkey and Greece have competing ambitions over gas reserves, and they disagree profoundly over who has rights to key areas of the eastern Mediterranean. They have laid claim to overlapping areas, arguing they belong to their respective continental shelves. Tensions between the two countries flared in 2020 over exploratory drilling rights in areas of the Mediterranean Sea, leading to a naval standoff.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. The use of plastic products in our daily lives is so widespread that many of our regular activities require a wide range of plastic accessories and products. Plastic is everywhere, from our homes to offices, businesses, and health centers. It is also used to make aeroplane parts, cars, trains, and so much more. Plastic is one of the most widely used materials due to its versatile features, which have boosted economies across the globe.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the programme that analyses profits, markets, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we are going to take a look at Iran's plastic production. We wanted to see how this market is doing and check out some major players in this sector. We will also peek into some of its contributions to the national economy. Enough said, let's walk through today's Bazaar.
To become more familiar with plastic products and their production, we visited Parhom Plast Arya. This company has been around for many years and is a major contender in the plastic products market. It makes hundreds of plastic-based products for a variety of uses. Some products are household plastic items such as baskets, dishes, utensils, and even larger things like chairs and tables. All things considered, this company provides some of the highest quality products found in the market. This is mainly because of its choice of raw material, which is rigorously tested for quality in its control labs. Moreover, raw materials such as polymers and additives are abundant inside the country. So, it doesn't have to look far for its feedstock. One of the advantages this company has is it controls the whole production and distribution process from design to sales.
In terms of household plastic products, there's always a thirst for newer and more stylish products coming from consumers. So, companies must stay on their toes and create new molds each year to offer products that excite customers. However, making new molds is not always easy, and it can be an expensive process. That's why some companies choose to import molds instead, while others develop their own in R&D departments.
This company's research and development division is at the center of all productions. It is where new products are created. It is also tasked with keeping the company up to date in several fields, including production, consumer trends, and other domestic demands. Plus, it is no surprise that this unit is also where national and international standards for safety and durability are applied. It might be interesting to know that this company was a pioneer in setting standards through some of its products nationwide. Each year, this company evaluates the market to release the most recent product designs, giving it a competitive edge over other brands. Its massive production facilities can produce thousands of tons of products each year. As part of its future vision, this company is already expanding its facilities by launching a new production line. Once this new unit is up and running, it will add some 8,000 tons to its annual production. It also hopes to create its very own high-quality molds in the near future. This firm has overcome significant challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Presently, this company is operating under its potential production capacity, and its ultimate goal is to use its full potential along the lines of exports. Now, plastic is known as a group of synthetic or semi-synthetic materials created through the polymerization process. So, one of the most prominent ingredients in this mix is polymers, which are a derivative of petrochemical products that come from processing oil. It's not surprising that Iran has an ever-expanding polymer industry, given its large oil reserves. We looked at some figures from the National Plastic and Polymer Industries Association. Data showed that the polymer industry gets most of its feedstock from domestic petrochemical complexes. Plus, there are some 8,000 production units that make plastic products nationwide. These units have a total capacity to produce roughly 13 million tons annually. Some $3.3 billion worth of polymer products were exported last year. That's according to the National Plastic and Polymer Industries Association. Furthermore, it says these exports registered a 23% increase compared to the year before. The association also says exports in this sector make up roughly 7% of the country's non-oil exports. Iran's oil and petrochemical industries are subject to US-imposed sanctions. Still, the wide variety of their products and high international demand has kept the market floating. On a broader scale, switching attention to added value products to boost non-oil exports has been a transformative move for Iranian industries. Through this, the country has tapped into its advanced domestic capabilities and diversified its economy toward a knowledge-based one. Household appliances are universal and an integral part of our modern daily life. Nearly all households have some sort of appliance meant to bring ease and comfort to everyday domestic tasks. Additionally, these items assist us in preserving and preparing food, cleaning our clothes, and overall helping us stay healthy. In general, the near 100% penetration of appliances in homes shows how crucial they are for our way of life and just how abundantly available these items are. This week, we will journey through Iran's massive home appliance industry. We wanted to see how this sector has developed over the years and check out some major players in this manufacturing arena. To become more familiar with this sector, we decided to visit Steel Alborz Industries. It was established 30 years ago and has since become a well-known household brand. This company began its work by producing steel sinks. Later, it added to its product basket and began manufacturing stoves, ovens, stovetop ventilation systems, and taps, among other kitchen attachments. With two factories in Shiraz and one in the capital Tehran, its production facilities can make hundreds of thousands of units annually in over 200 different models. One of these factories is solely dedicated to various molds needed to create its stylishly modern products. Early on in its manufacturing journey, this company used to import steel stencil sheets from Europe. But after becoming a subsidiary of the second largest producer of galvanized steel sheets, it began purchasing most of its raw material domestically. The company uses the latest technology to manufacture its products. Its production lines are equipped with cutting-edge automated assembly systems managed by experienced staff. Nonetheless important is the use of high-quality raw materials and strong sustainable designs are two key components in guaranteeing the long life of these kitchen appliances. Here is a short word on the machines used in manufacturing home appliances in Iran. Many production machines and automated systems such as steel laser cutters are domestically produced. Of course, that's not to say all of them are locally made. Some still need to be imported, but it is noteworthy just how much of this equipment is already available in domestic markets. Research and development and quality control are critical activities of this manufacturing company. The R&D department is responsible for developing new products as well as monitoring the market and customers' needs. Its quality control division is built into its production facilities. Here, items are frequently checked and tested with the latest technologies to ensure manufacturing uniformity. As you might know, this also guarantees that each item is made exactly the same, which increases the quality of the final product. The R&D and quality control departments are also responsible for implementing national and international standards, which led the way for its exports. Currently, this company not only distributes its products nationwide, but also sends its items to neighboring and Eurasian markets. This company largely attributes its success to its highly experienced and specialized staff, who are in charge of various production processes. On the whole, it has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Plus, it has dozens of representative agencies across the country. Like many in the home appliance industry, this company has faced many obstacles throughout the years. But its trump card has been its unique approach to solving these challenges. For example, the US-imposed sanctions were one that this company transformed into a domestic opportunity. Now, Iran domestically produces a lot of raw materials needed in this sector, which spares local manufacturers from spending millions on imports. What's more, domestically supplying raw materials to the home appliance industry has helped it blossom. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here's an overview of the sector and its productions, including some insight into raw materials produced in Iran. Iran is the 10th largest steel producer in the world, just behind Brazil. However, China is the undisputed producer with nearly 100 million tons of monthly output. That's just to give you an idea of how large the country's steel sector is. It's undoubtedly important, as the country's mammoth industry feeds numerous down-the-line sectors, including home appliance manufacturing. The World Steel Association's figures show that major Iranian steel mills produced nearly 30 million tons of crude steel and products last year. It might be interesting to know that over 30% of total productions are typically exported, generating millions in foreign revenue. But that's not the only industry that supplies raw materials to the home appliance sector. Petrochemical products, such as polymers, which are used to make plastic, also contribute to the production of home appliances. Iran's Home Appliances Manufacturers Union says some 15 million household appliances were produced in the country last year. That's far beyond the original production target of 12 million units set by the government. Meanwhile, Iran exports many of these products to neighboring regions, including Asia and Africa. Last year, the total value of exports was over $300 million, according to Iran's Trade Promotion Organization. All things considered, there is a lot to look forward to regarding Iran's expanding home appliance sector.
Okay, I shall now step aside for several minutes and let my good friend and colleague guide you on an educational adventure out on the field. Take it away.
Most of you have probably thought about biking to work, or biking to most places for that matter, instead of driving. You get a little workout done in your probably sedentary lifestyle, you help the environment, you don't pay for fuel during a global energy crisis, and well, frankly, you look cool. But you never actually got to doing it, or you did it a couple times and realized that it's not for you. Maybe it was too difficult, maybe you were burned out halfway through and had to take a taxi for the rest of the way, or that you showed up too sweaty for work. If you're still, however, interested in the idea, just not so much the problems, electric bikes are just the thing for you. And just why do I say that? Well, let's imagine you are biking to work and you find yourself burned out, or you get a bad cramp and you can't pedal the bike the rest of the way. So here are your options. You take a taxi and leave the bike, which is not really an option. You go back home hoping you were less than halfway to your destination, otherwise it would be even more difficult to do that. Or wait a good while till your energy level comes back up and miss work a little bit. None of these are elegant options, really. There is one, though. You have an electric bike, so you either don't even pedal at all for the rest of the way and just use the throttle on your electric bike, or you have the bike assist your pedaling so it's not as difficult and draining. You still get a workout done, but you're not drained completely afterwards. When he said 80% of the electronic kits are made in-house, it meant that pretty much the only thing that isn't being made here is the battery test kits and the LCDs they install on the bike handles that show you your current speed, wattage used by the motor, battery level, etc. And even that has a custom software. The 500, 750 and 1000 watt motors are made in-house and are installed in the way that you are seeing right now. Regular bikes from different brands and manufacturers are taken into the facilities and then they are prepped to have everything installed on them. There are lots of types for bikes, and for each bike with its purpose, they might use a different battery capacity and motor. For example, they use a 1000 watt motor and 64 cell battery on their biggest and baddest fat bike meant for rough off-road terrain, and a 500 watt motor and a 52 cell battery for their urban bikes that don't benefit too much from the extra horsepower. I mean, it's not actually horsepower, but you know what I mean. the process that goes behind turning mundane, regular bikes that are great for a workout to one that is not as good for a workout, but is a lot more convenient and a lot more capable of transporting you from one place to another. So first, they need to cut some holes into the chassis, precision holes into these oftentimes aluminum chassis to make room for the connections between the controller as well as the throttle on the handle and the battery pack. So once they have installed, now it's time for the electric motor, which is going to be installed on the rim. So they take the rim off, they disassemble all of the spokes on the rim, they reinstall it on the electric motor, but there's a crucial step here. They need to make sure that the screws of the spokes that are connected to the rim as well as the electric motor are completely balanced so that the rim doesn't skew to one side or the other. So they spin it to make sure it doesn't touch two screws on both sides. If it does touch it and there's friction, they need to re-tighten or re-loosen some of the screws to make sure it's completely balanced. And now, which is designed for the 500-watt electric motor, this is the entire system with the battery pack installed and the controller also attached, as well as the throttle. But there's also another cool thing about this particular display and this whole system, but I'll reserve that for just a few minutes after we talk to one of the people behind this project to give us a little bit more information.
As an engineer and environmental enthusiast, I've always looked for a product to simultaneously save the health of the people and save the environment. And that's why I started a company called EVTech to manufacture electric bicycles in Iran. Currently, we are the largest e-bike manufacturer in Iran, and our bikes are tailor-made to Iranian trains. And people can use them here in our mountainous cities like Tehran easily. Our bikes are ranging from fat bikes, mountain bikes, and city bikes, and have different motors with different output powers. So you can choose from our products based on your need and your applications. At the core, we are a company that mainly manufacture power electronic components of e-bikes and electric motorcycles. We are manufacturing power electronics chargers, power electronic e-bike controllers, and also design brushless DC motors that have been used in our products and electric motors that manufactured by other companies. We also manufacture our battery packs and use very, very sophisticated battery management systems to ensure that our batteries are working in their ideal conditions and are safe to use in everyday basis.
The last bit of information that I said I'd be talking about before. So the bike has its regular set of gears. You got the back gears and the front gears, but then there's display and with this number that shows a assistive gear, let's call it. So when the number is on zero, when you pedal for like one round, it doesn't assist you at all. But as the number goes up, it assists you more and more. So if you pedal the same amount and the number is on like three, it pushes you a lot further than if this number was set to zero. This is great for those times when you feel like you're really burned out and you can't pedal that much, especially when you're in an upward slope. So you increase this number, you get more assistance from the electric motor to push yourself forward a lot more. Now it's time for me to take it for a quick little spin. So this throttle is the difference between enjoying bike riding and not so much enjoying it and looking at it as a chore and just a workout. I have been like one of the people that I mentioned at the beginning of the program, the type that wants to bike to more places but doesn't do it because I find myself burned out too quickly when I'm going up a slope. With this, I can enjoy the flat surfaces and the downward slopes in biking, which are a lot more enjoyable than the upward slopes, and just skip the difficult slopes. So I'm seriously considering getting one of these electric bikes myself. And with that, we have come to the end of the program. Until next week.
What an awesome report, as always. Many thanks. Now, let's finish off the program with a look at some news and trends in this sector. As we mentioned, there is a trend of adding value to items to increase their uses and profits. And Iran's nanotech industry is paving the way for a variety of added value products, particularly in the plastics industry.
Iran's Nanotechnology Innovation Council estimates that roughly 800 kinds of Iranian-made nanotech products are in the domestic market. One of these is the development of biodegradable plastic bags through nanotech research. Iran's advanced products in this sector are sent to nearly 50 countries worldwide. Last year, these exports generated over $700 million. Iran is among the top five countries in nanoscience production and scientific achievements in this field.
Plastics are a vital component in Iran's medical device production as well. And this sector is seriously booming with new products each year that help save people's lives.
Last year, Iran produced thousands of medical devices, which it exported to 56 countries worldwide. Iran generally holds a 1% share of the global medical equipment market. Moreover, the Ministry of Health says Iran's stake is worth over $500 billion. That's 200 times more than its value in 2018, demonstrating how fast this sector is growing.
Speaking of plastic, one cannot overlook the harmful impact its waste has on the environment. It's terrible. And plastic bags have the most amount of waste, both domestically and worldwide.
Iran produces some 490 tons of plastic waste each day, and one-third of this is from plastic bags. While Iran recycles a lot of its plastic, controlling this waste is still an uphill battle considering production and consumer practices. Therefore, Iran's Environmental Protection Agency has embarked on detailing more regulations for reducing the use of plastic bags. The draft regulations include replacing plastic bags with biodegradable versions and creating production standards for environmentally compatible plastics. Most importantly, the draft addresses ways to reduce plastic bag use altogether.
Well, that covers today's Bazaar. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
Ya Ilahi wa Rabbi wa Sayyidi wa Mawlai li ayyi al-umuri ilayka ashku wa lima minha شدتا أم لطول البلاء
Brothers and sisters, during our explanations of the different parts of Dua al-Kumail, we have reached this excerpt. In this part, the commander of the believers says, Ya ilahi wa rabbi wa sayyidi wa mawlai, my Lord, my Master, my Protector. لأي الأمور إليك أشكو ولما منها أضج جوابك. For which things would I complain to you, and for which of them would I lament and weep? لأليم العذاب وشدته, for the pain and severity of the chastisement, أم لطول البلاء ومدته, or for the length and period of the tribulations. Dear listeners, in this part, the commander of the lovers, in this part of the supplication, is complaining about the tribulations and chastisements. In other words, he wants to say, O Allah, no one but you is able to heal my pain and eliminate my chastisements, to remove my punishments. All the beings are dependent upon you. They are all weak and poor, and I can turn to no one else. A poor one cannot do anything, and a weak one cannot solve our problems. So I have found that the key to solving any problem is in your hands, and the cure for any disease is possible with your power. You are the one in whose presence Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra alayha salam wept and said, O Allah, I ask you something which can be granted only by you. I ask you guidance, piety, independence, chastity, and doing what you like and are pleased with. O Lord, we ask you power for our weakness. We ask you wealth for our poorness, and knowledge and patience for our ignorance. O Allah, bless Muhammad and his progeny. Help us in worshipping and obeying and remembering you by your compassion, O the most merciful of the merciful. This is what has been narrated in Biharul Anwar. Imam Ali alayhi salam has realized this fact. This is what he is trying to tell us, that this is the Allah we are referring to. This is the Allah we have come to. This is the one to whom Prophet Ibrahim, along with his son Ismail, prayed humbly and asked things which could be fulfilled only by him. The Holy Quran says, when Abraham and Ismail raised the foundations of the house, they said, O our Lord, accept it from us. Surely thou art the hearing, the knowing.
My God, my Lord, my King and Master, which of the matters shall I complain to you, and for which of them shall I wail and weep? Shall I wail for the pains of the punishment and its intensity, or for the length of my suffering and its duration?
Thank you, Allah. So good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So we are asking this kind of Allah. We are referring to Him only, and we are complaining to Him for our chastisements to come. Ya ilahi wa rabbi wa sayyidi wa mawlai. You are my Lord, you are my Master, you are my Protector. Li ayyil umuri ilayka ashku. There are so many things that I have to complain to you about, and which of them would I lament and weep for? لأي الأمور إليك أشكو ولما منها أضج جوابك لأليم العذاب وشدته. Should I complain to you about the pain and severity of the chastisement,
أم لطول البلاء ومدته? Should I complain to you for the length and period of the tribulation? We have realized you. We know that you are the only one who can make us submissive. O Lord, show us our ways of devotion and turn to us mercifully. Surely you are the oft-returning to mercy, the merciful. O Lord, you are the one for whom Noah tolerated the pestering of his people for 950 years, and then to you he complained to descend water from the heaven and through the earth with all your power, drowning all your enemies, saving Noah and his disciples. O Lord, you are the one who made a few Muslims, along with the Prophet of Islam, dominate the disbelievers, whose number and facilities were three times more than the Muslims in the Battle of Badr alone. So God, we are taking refuge to you from these difficulties and tribulations. You are the one who can remove our problems with a single reward. You are the one who can grant us peace and ease. You are the one to whom all the prophets, all the infallible imams, all the believers, and all those sorrowful servants and repented people have complained from their problems. And you accepted, you saved them, you have treated them. You have shown us that you have this power. You are the absolute cause, and you are the only one we should refer to for our complaints. Brothers and sisters, we will continue discussion over this part of the Kumail supplication later on. Thank you for staying with us. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through half my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.